Hello and welcome to episode 1 of the Midwestern Scout. I'm your host, Dustin White. In this episode, we'll be talking about the Slaying of the Seven Sons, a photo shoot by Shane Belk. I've had the pleasure to work with Shane Belkwich on a number of occasions. He's a person with a rare sort of passion. While that passion can clearly be seen in his work, it is also present throughout his life. Recently, when a former high school teacher of his told him about being forced to resign, Shane immediately jumped in to correct the wrong that he saw. Without his activism, that story most likely would have been swept under the rug. It is that passion that has attracted many in the community to him, including myself. A year ago, I was lucky enough to be part of one of Shane's largest photo shoots, which truly was a collaboration of local artists. That shoot itself was an interpretation of the tragic myth of Niobe. For those who would like to see a short video detailing the story of Niobe, as well as photos from the shoot, a link will be provided in the show notes at midwesternscout.com/podcast. Instead of taking on the entire myth, Shane focused on just the slaying of the Seven Sons, who had fallen victim to the arrows of Apollo. Once he had decided on the scene he was going to do, Shane spent months working and researching to make sure that his idea could be realized. One of the great things about Shane is that he's also a person who knows he has limitations, but that doesn't scare him. Instead, he faces those limitations and finds ways to pass them. In this case, he surrounded himself with individuals who could make his idea a reality. To help create the scene, Shane recruited an excellent local artist, Paul Newt, to design a backdrop for the event, which became a magnificent piece of art. To help position the actors, Kevin Tengzidal, who has made a big imprint on the local art scene, was called in, while two photographers, Mike Lalonde and Jason Luder, were on set not only to help capture what was going on behind the scenes, but also to frame the photo. And as always, Greg Frank, Shane's trusty apprentice, was ready to make sure that everything went smoothly. Recruiting local artists and actors, Shane made the shoot larger than himself. The group owned it, and those present really felt that. Everyone's input was welcome, which allowed for everyone to fully commit to their parts. As it always seems to be true for these shoots, Shane did appear to be anxious, as did the entire cast. While he's produced more than 1,000 plates, there is always a bit of magic in the process for Shane, as if it's his first time again. The entire shoot lasted a few hours, but at the end of the day, everyone retired knowing that they had helped bring history back to life. However, the collaboration didn't really end then. More than a year later, Shane has once again brought together a crew for a shoot that should be amazing. Looking to bring to life a piece of Bismarck history, Shane will be depicting a scene from the wickedest street in the wickedest town. Scheduled for June, the shoot has been titled Murderer's Gulch. One thing that I hate seeing are historic buildings falling out of use. Driving along the old red scenic byway, west of Mandan, a number of such buildings can be seen. However, there is one historic structure that is having life breathed back into it. The former VFW building, the new Marine House. I had a chance to visit with Raymond Morrell, Commandant of the Dakota Leathernecks recently, as volunteers were busy with the construction. Giving me a tour of the building, Ray highlighted the work that has already been done on the building, as well as what is still needed. Quite possibly, though, what was most impressive was simply the amount of support the community has shown. It is really amazing what is being done. The restoration project began back in October of 2015. Fred Berger, who owned the property, approached the Dakota Leathernecks, giving them the opportunity to take over ownership of the building. For Fred, it was his way of saying thank you to these people who gave for our country. The building itself has seen better days. Built in 1918 as Price Consolidated School, it was moved to its present location in 1959, where it served as a VFW hall into the late 80s. Since then, it hasn't seen much use, and time hasn't been very forgiving. When Ray gave the tour of the place, it was clear that a good deal of work was needed. The walls had been stripped, supports were being put into place, the ceiling taken down. Massive effort had been undertaken in order to bring the building up to code, while also honoring its history. Yet Ray and the Leathernecks knew what they were getting into, as they had examined the building before accepting the new challenge. And it is a worthy challenge to take up, one that will add a great feature to the community. While progress is being made on the Marine House, with many in the community rising up to help out the endeavor, additional support is still being sought. There's a long ways to go to realize completion, But the Leathernecks are confident that they will be victorious. If you would like to help the Leathernecks in the reconstruction process, or donate to the cause, you can check out the Dakota Leathernecks on Facebook by searching Dakota Leathernecks Detachment Number 1419. Did you know? When thinking about the Civil War, North Dakota usually doesn't come to mind. There were no major battles that took place in the state, or at that time, the territory. However, a different war was forming, and the war in the South would have a definite impact on what would occur in the West. As the Civil War waged on, the United States was finding itself in need of soldiers. The primary battle in the South was taking up massive amounts of resources, but a secondary effort was being fought in the West as well, and additional soldiers were needed to maintain that front. The United States would find a seemingly perfect, or at least an interesting, solution to their problem. Seeing that hundreds of Confederate soldiers were suffering in Union prison camps, often in terrible conditions, the United States authorized the use of prisoners to help with the war effort. They would end up taking the nickname Galvanized Yankees, and a group of those soldiers would end up having a very important role in the formation of North Dakota. However, for those who would end up being recruited and sent off to Dakota Territory, life wasn't all that much better than in prison. For one such group, they were sent to establish a post on the Upper Missouri. That post became Fort Rice, and served a variety of functions. The primary purpose was to protect European settlers as they crossed the nation. Another purpose, though, was to try to establish positive relations with various Indian tribes along the Upper Missouri. Both tasks proved incredibly difficult. When thinking of sports, there are a few that usually come to mind. The national pastime, baseball, or football and basketball. In Bismarck Mandan, there are two other sports that maybe should come to mind, as our local teams have been making a name for themselves, and both had to do so on skates. The first, roller derby. Nearing the end of their fifth season, the Bismarck Mandan Derby Association has seen a great amount of growth in a short time. Having started with just one women's team, the Bombshells, the group has been able to expand to include a second women's team, the Bombzillas, as well as a men's team, the Bombers. Last year, after a successful season, the Bombers found themselves ranked 42nd in the world in the Men's Roller Derby Association, an impressive feat seeing that they are a smaller team who often compete against teams from major metro areas like the Twin Cities. Currently, they are ranked 46. The Bombshells have also seen great success themselves. Recently, they brought home the Dakota Cup after finishing the tournament undefeated. For more information on the Bismarck Roller Derby, go to www.bismanbombshells.com. The second local team that has skated into great success is the Capital Ice Synchro Team, the Chips. Founded 13 years ago by Rebecca Gallion, the Capital Ice Synchro Teams have made a huge impact across the nation. After just 5 years as a team, Capital Ice had made their way to their first sectionals, and in 2011 made their way to the Nationals. This year they continued to build on their success, and making their way to the Intermediate Championships at the Midwestern Sectional Championships in Portland, Oregon, they came home with one of their largest wins. Not only did they score a first-place finish, they also accomplished a larger milestone, scoring a 73.08. The Chips made the record books by gaining the highest score ever given to a team of their level. That score secured them a place in the 2016 United States Synchronized Skating Championships. Flowing like a well-oiled machine, the Chips took home the silver medal. For more information about the Capital Ice Synchro, go to www.bismarckfigureskatingclub.com. I had the chance to meet Paulette Bollinger a couple years ago. At the time, she met with me to give me a brief tour of her hometown, Hough, and the surrounding area. During the tour, she gave me a copy of her book, Nothing Hidden. Before I even picked up the book to read, though, the history in it was coming to life as Paulette showed me a number of the features that would be incorporated in the work, including the gravestone that inspired the name of her book. When I got around to reading the book, I was hooked. It wasn't a frantic page-turner, relying on cheap thrills to keep one interested. It was engaging and built up at a nice pace. A few hours later, I had finished the book. Nothing Hidden is a great piece of work that interweaves history with fiction. Paulette took a history that she's very familiar with, one that she is deeply connected to, and brought it to life. The period of history that I examined in Paulette's work is largely 1910 to 1912, which was an important time period in North Dakota. It was the early days of statehood, automobiles were beginning to rise in popularity, prohibition was in full swing, Catholics and Protestants didn't mix company. And in order to cross the Missouri River, one either had to wait until it was frozen, or take the train or ferry. The time period definitely lends itself to some great tales, and Paulette takes advantage of that. However, what really works for her book is the manner in which she lays out the story. Beginning with a marriage, the reader is introduced to a mystery. Those around the young couple are celebrating, but there is something clearly just beneath the surface. As the story continues, this mystery is continually built upon, with pieces of the puzzle being added throughout. A great revelation is promised from the beginning, but as with any story worth telling, the context has to be created. Paulette is exceptionally successful in doing such, making the final product an enthralling story that pushes the reader to continue moving ahead. For those fascinated with the history of the area, or those who just enjoy a good mystery, this is a book for them. I highly recommend it. I'm not a chef. However, as my wife likes to joke, I might think I am. I am a nerd, though, and I enjoy cooking, a combination that often leads to hours of research before I'm ready to actually commit to creating a dish. Such was the case a few weeks ago, as my father-in-law celebrated his birthday with a grill out. Wanting to bring a dish, and knowing that he enjoyed the bacon kale salad that Cloverdale had made for the Bismarck Beer Fest, I decided to attempt to recreate it. The recipe was quite straightforward, and if you'd like to try it, there'll be a link to it in the show notes at www.midwesternscout.com/podcast. However, the one ingredient that stuck out was the bacon, which isn't too surprising, as it is a food that seems to be intoxicating, a meat that people go absolutely crazy for, to the point that they can even buy pillowcases infused with its scent. So with bacon being so tasty, it would seem that it would be quite easy to select a package. However, anyone who has went to the grocery store knows that there are dozens of different types of bacon. The natural choice for this particular dish was Cloverdale, as it was where the recipe originated for me, and as far as I knew, bacon was bacon. Well, not exactly. One of the main keys to bacon is the fat-to-meat ratio. While bacon is fatty, it doesn't need to be overly fatty. Instead, it should have sizable streaks of meat that is fairly distributed and separated by snowy white fat. Cloverdale's bacon definitely meets that criteria. The second key, which is more of a matter of use, is how the bacon is packaged, generally either in nice stacks or fanned out, which is more intended to be cooked by the strip. Cloverdale packages their bacon in a nice stack, which for this recipe, as I would be chopping it up, was more ideal. And since it was a high quality product and packaged nicely, it was an easy choice. As a brief side note, because of bacon's high fat content, it stores exceptionally well in the freezer, with nearly no difference in texture or flavor from fresh bacon. A benefit of the high fat content is that it will remain soft even when frozen, which means that it doesn't really need to be defrosted. When slicing it up, freezing it beforehand is actually ideal, as it isn't greasy or stretchy, and thus it makes it much easier to cut. To freeze bacon, just make sure that it is stacked, and then wrap it tightly in a few layers of plastic wrap. Pop it into the freezer, and it can last for months. As the Midwestern Scout continues to grow, one of the things that we'll be looking to do is a number of different projects. The first, we are titling the Old Red Trail. As an automobile became more popular throughout North Dakota, a new transportation system was needed. Among an early portion of that system was the Old Red Trail. What originally began as a rudimentary dirt road eventually evolved into the state highway and finally a scenic byway. The purpose of this project is to explore the importance of the Old Red and preserve the history of the area. Through the use of written word, as well as photos and video, the intention is to bring the route to life. While we live in a digital age, part of what is unique about this project is that much of it will be captured on film. By going the route of film, many of the photos will be much more archival, allowing the project, and the history that it is recording, a better chance of being preserved for future generations. The use of film also means that each image will be a little bit more deliberate. The history each photo captures will be a bit more thought out, with the hope that the effort will shine through. To help bring this project fully to light, I'm looking for support from the community. The history of this area is expansive and diverse, and often a bit hidden. There are two main ways that the community can help. The first is through their own stories, your histories, your photos. History is more than just chronological facts. It's about a personal memories and stories. My goal is to compile those stories, those photos, those memories into one place. If you have such stories, I want to sit down with you and listen to the history you've experienced to record for posterity those events. The second way to help support this project is through donations and sponsorships. However, I want to give back to all those who support this endeavor, which is why those who do back this project will receive some special, limited edition prints. For those who donate $1 to $10, they will receive one limited edition print. 11 to 20, two prints. 21 to 30, three prints. 31 to 40, four prints, and so on, up to 10 prints. To donate to this project, go to our GoFundMe account at www.gofundme.com/Midwesterner. You can also go to www.midwesternscout.com and click on the old red tab where all the information and photos from this project will be kept. For those who would like to sponsor this project or would like more information, send me an email at editor@midwesternscout.com. That is it for the first episode of the Midwestern Scout. If you'd like more information on any of these stories or would like to connect with me, go to www.midwesternscout.com.